You met her, Holland said. You spent a night in her house. It's your job, not mine. I'm sure you've done it before. That's not the point. I'm sure you were good at it.
Not very.
You have to do it, Holland said. I just can't, okay? Don't make me. Okay? Plato spent an hour in seat 1A, front of the cabin left-hand side, and then he got restless. Air travel at night bored him. By day there was a view, even from 7 miles up. Mostly empty and brown, to be sure, but with enough roads and houses and towns to remind him there were new customers down there, just waiting to be recruited and served. But at night he couldn't see them. There was nothing except darkness and strings of distant lights. He got up and walked down the aisle, past his men, past the last first-class seat, into the empty space where economy class had been. He looked at the equipment on the floor. His men had checked it. He checked it again, because he was Plato, and they weren't. Food, water, all uninteresting. 7 coats, 7 hats, 7 pairs of gloves. All new, all adequate. The coats were big, puffy things filled with goose feathers. North Face, a popular make. All black. 6 were medium, and 1 was a boy's size. The submachine guns were H&K MP5Ks. Short, stubby, futuristic, lethal. His favorite. There were 7 small backpacks, each containing spare magazines and flashlights. Immediately, Plato diagnosed a problem. The backpack straps would have to be let out close to their maximum length to fit over the bulky coats. An obvious conclusion, simply a question of thinking ahead. But it hadn't been done. He was Plato, and they weren't. The ladders were made by an American company called Werner. Aluminum, 32 feet long at their maximum extension, rated for 250 pounds. They were all plastered with yellow warning stickers. They rattled slightly. They were picking up vibrations from the engines. They probably weighed about 20 pounds each. There were 4 of them. 80 pounds. They would be left behind. Better to use the airlift capacity for 40 extra glassine bricks than 4 useless ladders. The same with the 6 useless men, of course. They would be left behind, too. 900 pounds of replaceable flesh and blood versus 450 extra bricks of meth? No contest. Plato was already visualizing the return trip. He knew he would succeed. He had many advantages. Most of them were innate and overwhelming. His man on the ground was insurance. Nothing more. Caleb Carter was considered low man on the totem pole, which he thought was richly ironic. He knew a little about totem poles and Native American culture in general. He knew a little about a lot of things, but in a random, unstructured way that had paid no dividends in terms of high school grades or employment opportunities. So he had turned to the Department of Corrections, the default choice for his graduating class. Probably the default choice for many graduating classes to come. He had been trained and equipped with a radio and a polyester uniform and assigned to the night watch at the county lockup. He was the youngest and newest member of a 4-man team, hence, low man on the totem pole. Except that calling a new guy the low man on the totem pole was completely ass backward. Totem poles were, what, 20, 30 feet high? Native Americans weren't dumb. They put the most important guy at the bottom, at eye level. What important guy wanted to be 20 or 30 feet off the ground when no one could see him? Like supermarkets. The eye-level shelf was reserved for the best stuff, the high-margin items. The big corporations hired experts to figure out stuff like that. Eye-level was what it was all about. Thus, the low man was really the high man, and the high man was really the low man, in a manner of speaking. A common misperception, a kind of linguistic inversion. Caleb Carter didn't know how it had come about. Night watch was an easy job. The cells were locked before they came on duty and weren't unlocked until after they had left. In practice, Caleb's team had only one real responsibility, which was to monitor the population for medical emergencies. Guys could start foaming at the mouth or banging their heads on the wall. Some of them weren't fully aware of what prescriptions they should be taking. Some of them tried to hang themselves with jumpsuit legs all twisted up and knotted. They were a sorry bunch. The monitoring process involved 10 tours of inspection, one every hour. Naturally, most of them got blown off, sometimes all of them. Easier to sit in the ready room, playing poker for pennies, or looking at porn on the computer, or chilling with the earbuds in. At first, Caleb had been disconcerted by the negligence. New job, new life. He had started out with a measure of energy and drive. He had been prepared to take it seriously. But any new guy's first duty was to fit in. So he did. After a month, he couldn't remember what he had been upset about. What did the department want for their lousy $10 per? But the riot in the big house the night before had shaken things up a little. The watch leader had mandated 3 tours in the aftermath. He had even done one of them himself. Tonight he was looking for 2, but 4 hours into the shift, they hadn't even done the first of them, so clearly they were really on track for 1 only, which was about due right then. And naturally, Caleb would get to do it, because he was high man on the totem pole, which he was okay with. He would do it real soon. But not immediately, because right then he was occupied with clicking through a bunch of sites featuring naked fat girls and barnyard animals. Work could wait. Reacher slipped out of a battered sedan at the end of the Petersons' driveway and stood and watched the desk guy drive away. Then he headed for the house. It was like walking into a white tunnel. Plowed snow was piled 5 feet high, left and right. Up ahead was the Y-shaped junction, right to the barn, left to the house. The wind was strong. The land was flat and open. Reacher had never been colder. He knew that with certainty. A superlative had been achieved. One day in Saudi Arabia, at the start of Desert Shield, the noontime temperature had hit 140 degrees. Now, in South Dakota, he was suffering through minus 30, which was more like minus 50 with the wind chill. Neither extreme had been comfortable, but he knew which one he preferred.